Back together again, you and I chatting it up midweek Wednesday style, August 28th, 2024 on Connecticut Today. We welcome the Connecticut Inside investigative reporter Mark Fitch's analysis of a proposal from state lawmakers to classify certain types of substance abuse as an occupational disease for workers' compensation benefits and other legal protections. Hearst Connecticut Media senior editor and columnist Dan Haar stopped by to talk about the hot topics around the state, including the ongoing controversy about Connecticut's electric rates and the unrest in Stamford.
We'd like to check in with this gentleman from time to time. Mark Fitch helps run Inside Investigator, InsideInvestigator.org, looking deeply into a lot of the big stories around the state and some stories that you may not know about, including a group of state Senate Democrats announcing something that could affect a lot of businesses, large and small. Now, this is just an announcement of an idea. Doesn't mean it's going to become law, but it's an illustration, the critics would say, is one way that the Connecticut tends to act hostily, perhaps, toward businesses. We'll get the opinion of Mark Fitch. Hey, Mark, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Well, great to have you on. And this is interesting. State Senate Democrats announce a push here, Mark, what, to clarify addiction as an occupational disease. So explain to my listeners what's going on here. What's the theory behind this?
Well, basically, what it would do is classify substance use disorder as an occupational disease, which means it is born out of the performance of your job or is related to your job. I do think it's going to be a difficult hill to climb, but, you know, if you listen to their argument, I mean, Senator Saad Anwar, who's a physician, he's kind of leading the charge on this. He used this illustration. He said, you know, you're a machinist and you're working, mm-hmm. you know, hunched over and your back starts to hurt. So you go to the doctor and the doctor prescribes opioids,
sure.
you know, like, you know, they used to. Now you're addicted and you run out of pills and you end up on, you know, using street heroin. And all this came about through the course of your employment. They sent you to the doctor prescribed you these opioids and now you're hooked. And I think a lot of people can follow the bouncing ball on that one, you know, because we've seen the devastation of prescribed opioids have done.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be a more difficult hill to climb when you start talking about, like, I don't know, cocaine or meth or, you know, like, you know, other really hard drugs. I think it'd be tough to sit there and say, like, hey, your employer has to cover this.
Yeah. And Mark, even with the opioids, and I get it, I understand it, but the weird thing I found about this is, well, if the employer is just doing his or her or their due diligence, geez, how you feeling? Oh, man, my neck's killing me. All right, we'll put a claim in, workman's comp, go see a doctor. The employers, Mark, are not doctors. They don't have a prescription pad. you know what I mean? I can see where the pushback would be on this. And, you know, at first blush, I read this and said, well, wait a minute. This machine shop, like you said, sends a guy with a bad elbow or a bad back. But is it the owner's fault that the guy that he went to see is a quack here or runs a pill factory? You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, one of the other things to think about is, you know, they were talking about union contracts and, like, union machinists, and some of the union leaders were there speaking at this press conference. And, you know, the unions have their contracts, and a lot of those contracts, it says that if an employee is facing, you mm-hmm. know, alcohol or drug addiction, that these are the steps that you take. You can't just fire them. You have
to
B, and C. And of course, you know, when you get into the private sector, you have insurance coverage, and a lot of times insurance coverage may cover, you know, rehab, things like that. Maybe mm-hmm. not to the full extent that they, you know, people may want, but a lot of times there are protections there. But it seems like what this would do is essentially kind of extend those union protections to private industry, you know, by saying that, yeah, if they're experiencing substance use disorder, you can't get rid of them. You have to treat them, you know, as their employer. So it creates worker protections and, you know, prevents somebody who is facing substance use disorder from just getting fired outright.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of a weird thing to put on the employers. I think a lot of people might have difficulty understanding why that would, you know, making that connection. And, you know, I did reach out to the Connecticut Business and Industry Association about this, but they didn't really have any comment because there wasn't any language for them to look at. And they were actually a bit confused about it as well. They're like, we're not really sure what they're proposing here, so we're going to do a wait and see.
Mark Fitch, the guest, the inside investigator, Connecticut inside investigator. And you know, I said to my audience earlier, Mark, I mean, you know, there are dozens and maybe a couple of hundred bills that are introduced that never see the light of day. So I can understand why they're doing this early, way before the January session here, to maybe run this up a flag. So we have no idea whether this will even have a committee vote, will we?
No, but, you know, Saad Anwar is high up the food chain in the Senate. And, you know, the Democrats are in control at this point. And but I think they also made the announcement because it was coming up on, I believe it's like Overdose Awareness Week something like that this week. There's been a few announcements. So I think they're probably, you know, trying to tie that in as well. But, you know, when the Senate Democrats stand up and say they're going to do something, generally you pay attention because they're more likely than anybody to get it through.
And on the back end of this, Mark Fitch, even though, like you say, the folks at CBA didn't have an exact read on this yet, but again, I guess this may be, I could see this, Mark, being packaged by maybe CBIA and maybe the Republicans in their caucus is saying, hey, here is just another idea that prospective businesses, you know, like the small manufacturer, like the tool and die shop or the high-tech manufacturer may look at and say, you know, Connecticut's nice, but we can go over the border in Massachusetts. I don't know what their laws are, but again, I could see this becoming a political football here.
Yeah, and, you know, this happens every session is that, you know, the business, you know, industry goes out there and, you know, kind of gets beaten up a little bit. And, you know, last year businesses opposed, you know, certain sick time expansions that those went through. There were a number of things that the business community either supported and didn't get or opposed and did get. So, you could look at that as another, you could look at this as another, you know, chance to step on their toes. But, you know, I think, you know, Senator Jan Hochadel made some interesting points about, you know, when you treat somebody, sometimes you don't lose that employee. You get that employee back, and they're better, and they're going along. And if you look at the cost that addiction plays for businesses, when you talk about absenteeism and the cost for insurance and all these different things, that maybe treating it is more cost effective in the long run.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Absolutely, yeah. Mark, while we have you here, I wanted to get your comment on this. I see you wrote about this interesting lawsuit here that our Attorney General William Tong is taking part in. Apparently, there's an app or there's a kind of a network here that is coming under scrutiny because, what, it's used by property owners and landlords. And the allegations here that this is illegal, it forces collusion, it fixes rents here. What's going on with that thing called RealPage?
Yeah, RealPage Inc. So basically the accusation is that RealPage is functioning like a monopoly. Landlords use it to, it's a software company, and it gets all the landlord information and basically tells them like, hey, this is the, you know, this is what you should charge for rent. This is, you know, what you can get and everything like that. And because the landlords are all feeding information into this algorithm, the algorithm's spitting out, hey, you can charge this much, and like trying to get them the most money together. And that's the difference, is instead of it being a competition among landlords, I own this building and some other guy across the street owns another building, we're both competing for renters. Instead, we're both saying, hey, I charge this, you charge that. Let's both together charge more. And then what's the renter going to do? I mean, they still need a place to live. So that seems to be what is being, you know, what the government is accusing them of doing. There were some certainly interesting comments made by landlords who use the RealPage software and some RealPage executives basically saying like, hey, this is classic price fixing. Like, hey, you know, we're
oops.
look what we're doing. You know, they didn't seem to be hiding it all that much. But yeah, it's basically an antitrust, you know, accusation. And RealPage is huge. It actually has like 80% of market share.
I never knew about this thing. Yeah, Mark, before you or anybody else mentioned it, I'm like, what is this? And I'm like, wow. You're right. It is huge.
Yeah. And they, you know, big markets here in Connecticut and in, you know, city areas, the metropolitan areas and things like that. So, you know, they're making the argument that essentially all these different landlords through this RealPage algorithm colluded and formed a monopoly to increase the prices of rent.
Mm.
So we'll have to see how that plays out. These antitrust things are never fast.
A lot of billable hours, Mark, for our friends that are lawyers, right?
No kidding.
How big is the retainer? Let's start at $100,000. All right, there you go. Folks, for the story on the substance abuse angle to employers and this RealPage story and more, I'm looking at a bunch of stories here. Great in-depth reporting here. A lot better than some of the other outlets here. Go to insideinvestigator.org. Mark Fitch, as always, great to chat with you. We'll chat with you in a few weeks. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Mark Fitch there, insideinvestigator.org. He has yet another good story today in the Hearst papers, including the CT Insider page regarding the political jockeying, the anger, whatever, over this electricity, this power issue. We've had it explained to us numerous times. But Dan Harn, good afternoon to you. Great to have you back. And I guess Dan, this is the kind of thing where, as you point out in your story, Dan, there's a lot of anger out there, and I guess maybe people just want to see, I don't know what. They know it's going to take a long time to fix, but as you say, the anger is starting to weigh on people a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, 90% of the anger is misdirected.
Yeah.
Right. There's anger at the regulators, which may be, there's some little piece of this that you could say the regulators might have done something about.
Mm-hmm.
That's debatable, and that is charge some of this public service costs in 2023 instead of 2024. But for the most part, you're paying the money one way or another.
Yeah.
And then there's anger at the companies, Eversource and UI, and there's plenty of reason to be mad at them, but this isn't it. If you want to be mad at them when they have a rate case and when they want to charge their executive salaries to the ratepayers that are overblown, the millions of dollars. Be mad at that, not this. This is entirely 100% stuff that they had nothing to do with and were ordered to charge and to just pass through onto their bills, not remotely. And I've gotten comments from people about the, for example, we're talking, of course, about the electric rates.
Yeah.
And there's a charge that amounts to, you know, it depends on the person, but between $20 and $80 on your bill, not as much as 80, but on your bill, 20 to say 50 for Millstone for that contract. And I've gotten comments from people saying, why should we bail out Eversource because they wrote a lousy contract for themselves?
Well,
no. It's not their contract, folks. Like I said, you can blame them, but not for this.
You know what I think is happening here, Dan, and I was talking about this on my show the past few days. I think, and you and I both know this, and I tell people, this is not going to get fixed in 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 years. This could take decades to fix the way these things happen. But I think, Dan, and you can disagree with me on this, I think that there are people that just want to hear from Hartford in more numbers. Okay, we hear you. Yeah, you're upset. We hear you. Maybe we should do better, and we're going to get together, and if not with a special session, we'll do it in January, and it's going to take decades to fix, but, you know, we understand you're upset. I think people are just kind of looking for a little bromide, Dan. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like the weather. You know, people are upset about extremes in the weather.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is, and I've been hearing from people that are heating with electricity.
Yeah.
And when I write insensitively, when I write, hey, use less air conditioning.
Oh, boy.
People say, nobody likes it when I say that, but I say it.
Yeah.
And I've said it twice now in columns, and that's that. And they should. People should use less air conditioning. It doesn't mean turn it off and fry and you know, die of a heat stroke. It just means, like, you know, turn it down. Turn it down when you go out of the house for a couple hours. You know, like...
My grandmother's in the hospital because of Dan Haar. He made her turn off her air conditioning.
But I'm getting emails from people who are heating with electricity, and they're facing... This coming winter, with this charge on the bill, they're gonna face hundreds of dollars of extra charges. And they think correctly, they are correct, that just because they heat with electricity rather than heating with oil or natural gas or wood or flint or whatever you heat with, they think that that's unfair, that they have to pay public benefits.
Yeah.
And they are 100% right about that. The other thing that I found out yesterday, this is going to make some people mad.
Okay.
The people in the municipal electric systems, Wallingford and Norwich?
There's about 8 municipalities. I live in Wallingford. Yeah.
And are you in part of that?
Oh, yeah. My rates are very low. Now, is this good news or bad news?
It's good news because you don't pay the public benefit.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
You're not paying. You're getting power from Millstone, but you're not paying the benefit charge for it, right? You're getting the benefit of living in a state that takes care of impoverished ratepayers, but you're not getting the cost tacked onto your bill.
That's right. That's why Wallingford.
You could argue that those impoverished ratepayers don't live in Wallingford. I don't know.
That's why I keep telling people Wallingford's the center of the universe. Let's shift from Wallingford down the coast a bit. This is a real soap opera here, Dan Haar, in Stamford. What's going on there? We have a little reversal now.
When last we spoke, 1 week ago, on this very airwave, Annabel Figueroa was the sitting state representative who lost her primary and who was stripped of all committee seats after making what I think we can all agree were anti-Semitic statements.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And she also, under pressure, resigned from the board of reps of the state, the town of Stamford.
Yeah.
Right? It's unclear why a person should be on both. But we've got municipal officials who are serving in the state legislature. Mm-hmm. That's a different question. So she resigns, and now this week she unresigned from the board of reps. And the chairman of the board of reps, she's come out swinging. She's now saying the tenor of what she's saying is, look, what I said was bad, but it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
She got fired from her job at Norwalk Hospital.
Yeah,
she's getting ousted, if she didn't already, from the town committee. She's ousted from the board of reps. She already lost anyway her seat, and she's ignominiously stripped of committee assignments, which is 100% symbolic because the committees aren't going to meet before they have the new session with the swearing in of her successor, whoever that may be. Presumably it'll be Mr. Jacobs and the person that she made the comments about, but let's see. And maybe a Republican can win, or Green Party, or what have you.
You never know.
So now she's saying, look, it wasn't that bad because in my heart I wasn't anti-Semitic. I said something anti-Semitic, but I'm not anti-Semitic in my heart. I only meant to say we shouldn't be represented by a Jewish person because that's who was running against me. So she unresigned, and the legal opinion from the city council, is that she never officially resigned. So therefore, she's on the board of reps, and we're back to square one.
Wow.
And if the board of reps wants to force her off, they'll have to take whatever measures are in the charter to make that happen.
Wow. Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media with us. A couple of more things here. Dan, I guess there is Nancy Pelosi is going to be doing a Zoom event with Rosa. What's up with that?
Oh, I thought it was in person. Wait a minute.
Oh, wait a minute. No, never mind. No, a Boom event on September 22nd in New Haven. I'm sorry, I misread that.
Right. So she's doing her book tour.
Oh, book
and
event.
She wrote a book about power and and deals. And I guess it's the opposite of the art of the deal because it has the word deal in it, but it's probably not the art of the deal.
Yeah.
And she's going to be on stage with Rosa DeLauro, which, who knows, that might be the only time in this campaign that Rosa DeLauro sits on a stage in public because she doesn't, as you know, well know, she doesn't like to debate.
No. I know that, yes.
So this could be the closest thing we get to seeing her in person, although she does campaign and does events, but she doesn't like to debate. So, I don't know. You tell me, how big a political event is that the former speaker billed, she's being billed by R.J. Julia Booksellers,
yeah,
as the most powerful woman in the history of United States politics.
I could see that. I mean, she can still make it rain. She can still fundraise like hers. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be either her or Hillary, and I might take Nancy Pelosi. I might, yeah, yeah.
Well, Hillary was Secretary of State,
yeah,
but many women have been Secretary of State. Madeleine Albright,
yep.
What's her name, the piano player under Bush, great.
Condoleezza Rice.
Yep. So Secretary of State, First Lady, many women have been Senator. Hillary has been all three. So, yeah, sure, maybe. And also, of course, the nominee.
Yeah.
So I give it to a longtime two-time speaker, mm-hmm, not two-term.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, we could debate it. She's a powerful woman in American politics and remains powerful.
And finally, Dan, as we wrap up here, this survey of teachers, I read a little bit about that. And boy, I got to tell you, I have family and friends that do this, but it ain't easy. Not an easy job.
My daughter is one, and she's every bit as angry as any teacher you'll meet.
Really?
And she's not only angry about the pressures that are on teachers,
mm-hmm,
but about the way that the current in fashion way of teaching,
yeah,
which she believes is teaching way too much, you know, to the test and
mm-hmm
so forth. And that's not something new. My mother used to taught in the 50s, 60s, and 70s,
yeah,
used to rail against teaching for the test and not teaching the whole student. So this is not a new pressure. What's new,
mm-hmm,
is that it's coming at a time when teachers are being overworked and not underpaid necessarily, but
yeah,
certainly not super paid.
What grade level does your daughter teach at?
Elementary music.
Okay, nice. Very nice. All right. I'd like to get her perspective, or I guess you may do something on this. Fascinating, Dan, all these schools now, really. And I credit the governor for this and the State Board of Education saying, hey, tailor the policy how you want it. But it's good to see, and we see this more in Fairfield County, too, some of these schools saying, you know, enough while you're here with the electronic devices and the phones. Let's get back to learning. And maybe as you get a little older, we can tailor those policies better. You know what I mean?
And you know who opposes that? The parents.
Oh, yeah.
Suburban parents.
Yes.
Because they think they need to be in touch with little Johnny and little Jenny all day long so they can send a text because it's way too important what they have to send to their kids in the middle of the day.
Yes.
Make sure that you lock the back door when you go out today. That has to be sent in the middle of math class because it can't wait.
Yeah, Dan, it's like you and I when we were in school. I suspect you and I, but hey, if they had to get a hold of us, what do they do? They call the office and somebody bought us a note. Remember those days, Dan? Remember those days?
Yeah, how many times did that happen? And you're like once in the life
once,
of every student.
Maybe once or twice in all the years. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Dan Harhurst, Connecticut Media, senior editor and columnist. Dan, good stuff. Have a great weekend. We'll talk next week, sir. Thank you.
Talk to you next week. Bye.
All right, Dan. Take it easy.